Welcome to the Spiritual Cartel Big Book Main Share. This week, I am pleased to introduce Anthony B. from London, who has kindly agreed to come in and share for us. Over to you, Anthony.
Thank you, Andy. My name's Anthony B. I'm a grateful recovered member of Cocaine Anonymous. I haven't found it necessary now to pick up heroin, cocaine, crack cocaine, you know, prescription drugs, private doctors, national health doctors, prison doctors, or alcohol since the 25th of the 2nd, 2015. But I'm under no delusion or illusion or self-deception that I'm cured, because I'm not. It's just been put into remission as a result of good sponsorship, by the grace of God, good sponsorship, getting connected to a power greater than myself, but I choose to call God and work in this program one day at a time. I'm going to start this share with a couple of little readings. And it says, an addict fell in a hole and couldn't get out. A businessman went by. The addict called out for help. The businessman threw him some money and told him to buy a ladder. But the addict could not find a ladder in this hole he was in. A doctor walked by and the addict said, help, I can't get out. The doctor gave him some drugs and said, take this, it will relieve the pain. The addict said, thanks. But when the pills ran out, he was still in the hole. A renowned psychiatrist rode by and heard the addict's cry for help. He stopped and said, how did you get in there? Were you born there? Did your parents put you there? Tell me about yourself. It will alleviate your sense of loneliness. So the addict talked with him for an hour. Then the psychiatrist had to leave, but he said he'd be back next week. The addict thanked him, but he was still in the hole. A priest came by and heard the addict calling for help. The priest gave him a Bible and said, I'll pray for you. The priest got down on his knees and prayed for the addict and left. The addict was very grateful. He read a whole Bible. He was still stuck in that hole. A recovered drug addict, alcoholic, happened to be passing by. The addict cried out, hey, help me, I'm stuck in this hole. Right away, the recovering drug addict, alcoholic, jumped in the hole with him. The addict said, what are you doing? Now we're both stuck here. But the recovered drug addict, alcoholic, said, it's okay, mate. I've been here before. I know the way out. You know, and that was my experience. I was stuck in that hole for years. Now I'm just going to do another little reading. And it says at the end of the step one in the 12 and 12, it says, why all this insistence that every CA must hit bottom first? The answer is that few people will sincerely try to practice the CA program unless they have hit bottom. For practicing CA's remaining 11 steps means the adoption of attitudes and actions that almost no drug addict alcoholic who is still drinking can dream of taking. Who wishes to be rigorously honest and tolerant? Who wants to confess his faults to another and make restitution for harm done? Who cares anything about a higher power, let alone meditation and prayer? Who wants to sacrifice time and energy in trying to carry the AA's message to the next sufferer? No, the average drug addict, alcoholic, self-centered in the extreme, doesn't care for this prospect unless he has to do these things in the order to stay alive himself. Under the lash of alcoholism and drug addiction, we are driven to CA, and there we discover the fatal nature of our situation. Then and only then do we become as open-minded to conviction and willing to listen as the dying can be. We stand ready to do anything which will lift the merciless obsession from us. And the big book reading I've actually chose is from page 24. And it says this. It says, the alcoholic addict may say to himself in the most casual way, it won't burn me this time, so he is out. Or perhaps he doesn't think at all. How often have some of us begun to drink or use in this nonchalant way? And after the third or fourth, pounded on the bar or on the coffee table in the crack house and said to ourselves, for God's sake, how did I ever get started again? Only to have the fork supplanted by, well, I'll stop with a sixth pipe or the sixth drink, you know, or what's the use anyhow? When this sort of thinking is fully established in an individual with alcoholic addict tendencies, he has probably placed himself beyond human aid, and unless locked up, may die or go permanently insane. These stark and ugly facts have been confirmed by legions of alcoholic addicts throughout history. But for the grace of God, there would have been thousands more convincing demonstrations. So many want to stop but cannot. There is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings that the process requires for its successful consummation. But we saw that it really works in others. And we have come to believe in the hopelessness and the futility of life as we have been living it. When therefore we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up this simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven and we have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep, effective spiritual experiences. So in the book, it's referenced on page 25, 27 and 47. It's actually on 5, 6, 7 at the back of the book, Spiritual Experience, because there's only one thing for a chemical problem, that is a spiritual solution. Then it says, which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which was indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do for ourselves. If you are seriously alcoholic addict, as we were, we believe there's no middle of the road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible. And if we had passed into the region from which there is no return from human aid, we have but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best as we could. And the other was to accept spiritual help. This we did because we honestly wanted to and were willing to make the effort. And my name's Anthony Bell. I'm still a recovered, grateful member of Cocaine Anonymous. Not cured. I've recovered today from a seemingly open state of mind and body. You know, welcome to anyone new on the platform, anyone back from a relapse, or anybody who might even be drifting, because the steps do deflate the ego, but the ego does reconstruct. So my experience is, you know, this is gels. This illness is institutions. What are the institutions? Detox centers, treatment centers, psychiatric units, sanitariums. It's dereliction, landing up in sordid places, or death. That is what this illness is, you know, and I've experienced nearly every one of them. Fortunately, by God's grace, I'm here to tell the tale, you know, and but for the grace of God, go I. So, you know, I'm not going to give you a big drugology or a drinkology. We all know how to use. We all know how to booze. Staying clean and sober, you know, is what I need to learn how to do. And the only way I could do that, you know, I tried loads of different methods. I come in at 49. I picked up, so this is say about 9 years of age. I lost the power of choice. I lost the power of control because the drug and the drink hit the spot. I like the effects it produced. And then I lost the power of choice. I lost the power of control. There was no choice. There was no control. And I'm of the school that the ism, the internal spiritual matter, the I self for me, and that incredibly short memory precedes the ick, the drug addict or the alcoholic, you know, and then I lose the power of choice. I lose the power of control. Then there's no choice and there's no control. And in my journey, there was a few interventions along the way, you know, treatment centers, detox centers. And when I was in them therapeutic environments, the amygdala would come up, fight or flight. Even prison is part of my story as well. But in prison, I went to any lengths to use or booze. You know, I was on the first treatment facility ever introduced into the prison system in the UK, you know, back in the 90s. But my motives were wrong, you know, and I was of that type. No matter where I was, I went to any lengths to use or booze. I manipulated doctors. You know, I was getting methadone scripts for in prisons. I'm not, you know, bragging about that, you know, but what I'm trying to say is, you know, I went to any lengths to use or booze. So I kind of rocked up here at 49 years of age, you know, after being in a few treatment centres, you know, and as I say, that amygdala would come up, that fight or flight. And there's two other aspects to that, fall or flop, but I would fly. You know, my ego would start reconstructing. There's a story in the book called The Jaywalker, and it's about the ego getting smashed, the ego. See, my problem, my drink and drugs were my solution. They were my solution. Running out was my problem, you know, and I'd still be waking up restless, irritable and discontent till I could again experience the sense of ease and comfort, you know, that a drink or a drug produced, you know, and it amplified the problems towards the end. But objectively, I found out I'm the problem. I found out I was the problem, you know, when I got here into Cocaine Anonymous in 2015, you know, by the grace of God, you know, I got an act of providence, but I had to be beaten. I had to go through that ringer. Let me tell you, mate, I had to go through that ringer, you know, and I'm very fortunate that I've come out the other side of that only by God's grace, you know, because there was near-death experiences for me. I could have landed up getting killed, killing someone, got lifed off, overdoses, being behind the wheels of cars, all that. All that rubbish that goes with that lifestyle. And I didn't know. The first time I tried to get a bit of recovery, I was about 25. It took another 24 years for me to get here. You know, there weren't a girlfriend. There weren't a family member. Even when I thought I'd abandoned the child, the guilt, the shame and the remorse weren't sufficient enough. Even consequences was not sufficient enough to restore me to sanity around the question of the first drink or drug. You know, the intervention needed to be divine. You know, I needed a divine intervention, but I didn't know that at that time. You know, my story is, I'm going to touch on the book in a minute, but my story is, I landed up getting arrested on a blackout, and I landed up in an institution in London called Wormwood Scrubs, and I landed up getting to a meeting by default. And I got to this meeting, and this guy came in and shared his experience. I mean, this don't have to have been your story. You don't have to have been to a prison. You don't have to have been to a treatment center. You don't have to have been to a detox. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop using cocaine and all other mind-altering substances. You know, we're all coming on different ships, but we're on the same boat here. You know, it don't matter how you come in or what way you come in, you know, you're here. Now, it's about getting someone, you know, if you're new, you're back from a relapse or you're drifting, you know, it's about getting someone who's armed with the facts about themselves, about the disease and about the program. Anyway, this guy came in and shared, I got there by default. I believe God put him there that day for me. I've never seen this bloke since, you know, I've never seen this fella since. And he said, as a result of getting connected to a 12-step program, I want to a power I choose to call God. He said, I've not committed no crime for 15 years. Now, I've worked with people from all different walks of life. I work with you from whether you're from a doorway, a one-bedroom council flat, or whether you, let's just say as an example, you live in a six-bedroom place in Knightsbridge. You know, I've worked with people, God's got a sense of humour, you know, from the legal fraternity, the medical fraternity. I work with anybody. You know what I mean? I never look down on anyone because that person could be your next sponsor. That's what I was told. You know, and so this guy came in, he said, I've not committed no crime for 15 years. I've not picked up a drink or a drug for 15 years, not been near a prison cell for 15 years. And I'm looking at him thinking, what? He said, the only time I come back to a prison, he said, is hopefully to carry a message and give someone some hope. You know, hearing other people's experience, that power of identification, you know, letting people know, hold on, pain ends. He said, giving some people some encouragement, letting them know there is a way out beyond the gate. He said, but it's not just about that prison gate. He said, it's about the gate in your mind. He said, it's about the, and I'll get to that. I'll touch on that in a minute. He said, it's about the prison that's within your mind. You know, and he said, I pray before I come in and I pray as I'm coming out, some seeds will get planted and they get watered and the Father will increase them. He got my attention, this guy, you know, and I'll end up getting a bit of literature. And my story is similar to Bill D's, Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. I started working the first 3 steps. And, you know, I started reading. I was getting a bit of guidance over the phone from someone I know, someone on, from the services in the prison. I started working the first 3 steps. And I used to go into the first 3 steps with prayer. You know, I had all the steps done up, you know, and I had them on my wall. So I was told, don't go near the 4 steps. Just start working the first 3 steps. I was on 100 mil of methadone. I've been using prescription drugs for years. You know, and then the next thing, I'm asking them to reduce me on the methadone. And people were coming in offering me bits of gear, you know, and I was knocking it back. And I was thinking, where's it? That weren't me. I went to any lengths to use or booze. And, you know, so basically, I started working the first 3 steps and something happened. Something just happened. You know, I was going to meetings and this guy said, you know, he said, I hope some seeds will get planted. They get watered and the Father will increase them. And I landed, as I said, I worked the first 3 steps and I got reduced down from 100 mil of methadone to 15 mil of methadone. I landed up getting to the oldest 12-step provider in Europe. You know, I landed up going to their secondary unit at a little church building. I'd done a 22-day detox in this treatment facility. Never completed a treatment facility in my life. You know, never completed one in my life. Done 3.5 months in this treatment centre. I got up to step 7 in the treatment centre. I met my first sponsor at a meeting where I'm based now in Bristol. The meeting was called Living in the Solution. He's about 20 odd years now, clean, sober. My current sponsor's 30 years. I'm in my 10th year. You know, and I met him and he was from my area in London. He was a little bit younger than me, but he was 12 years clean and sober. He was a heroin intravenous snowball user. You know, he was a crackhead. He used prescription drugs, but he was 12 years clean and sober. And he was doing all right. He had a little business. He was married. He had driving a little Merc. It weren't really that what he had materialistically that impressed me. What really impressed me was that he was 12 years clean and sober. And he had a working knowledge around this literature. So I landed up getting up to step 7 in the treatment centre. I went onto a day programme in Bristol, you know, and I landed up going through the steps there. He said to me, do that first. Then I went through the steps with him. I went through the steps with him, Joe and Charlie. Then I went on a couple of Came to Believe retreats. This was all within my first 15 months, 16 months, maybe 17 months of being here, you know. And then I've gone through the steps a few times, and I continue to do that. You know, I live in 10, 11, and 12 today, but I'm going to get onto this reading that I chose. So it says there is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching level of the price. So when I met my first sponsor, it says the confession of the shortcomings which the process requires for its successful consummation, but we saw that it really worked in others. We had come to believe in the hopelessness and the futility of life as we had been living it, when therefore we was approached by those in whom the problem had been solved. So I met him at the back of a meeting. And you know, it's just the way it happened. Kind of people drifted off, and then he approached me. Went, "All right, mate, how you doing?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "I, you know, I'm still in a treatment center at the moment." And then we started having a chat. And then you know, we had a little chat. We identified, and then we swapped numbers. And he said, "You know, just give me a shout when you're getting when you're nearing the time to get out of the treatment center." So when I read, what really caught my eye when I first started reading the book, because I landed up getting a little big book in in prison. I've still got that book as it happens. I've got loads of books, but you know, I've still got that little book. And I started reading the book. You know, I started reading the doctor's opinion. I started reading the first 43 pages. It showed me where I suffer physiologically and psychologically, the body and the mind. Once I start, I can't stop. And when I stop, I can't stay stopped. Why can't I stay stopped? Now, in the first doctor's opinion, 33, 44 pages to the top of the qualification there, it shows me where I suffer from a body and mind. This, you know, that's the severity of my illness and the common perils, the common problem. And why can't I stay stopped? Because of the second half of step one, which shows me that I'm suffering from this spiritual malady. I'm restless, I'm irritable, and I'm discontent. I've got this, you know, and until I can again experience the sense of ease and comfort that heroin, cocaine, crack cocaine, you know, prescription drugs or alcohol produces, then I'm still restless, irritable, and discontent, you know. And I was driven, mate. I was driven, you know. So, and then it showed me that in the bedevilments on page 52, why I can't stay stopped. It showed me on page 60, it talks about an actor. All these personas, these masks that I keep putting on, you know, and then it shows me that I'm a right hypocrite. You know, all I'm doing is pointing outwardly. I'm not looking at myself at all. I'm going out committing crime, and I'm blaming the police, and I'm blaming the judicial system. It's their fault. It's their fault. It's their fault. You know, I'm full of ego. I can't accept what's going on within me. And then it's the root of my trouble is selfish and self-centeredness. Is the root of my trouble. I'm driven by 100 forms of fear: fear of rejection, fear of abandonment, fear of betrayal, fear of losing what I've got, fear of not getting what I want, fear of thinking that the grass is greener on the other side. And it really never was. It really never was. You know, but when I lost the power of choice and I lost the power of control, I thought it was, and it wasn't. Do you know what I mean? And my behaviors, I was very subversive, very anti-authoritative, you know, I was very rebellious, you know, and I was just of that type. You know, and but I had to go through the ringer. I had to go through the ringer, you know, and every time it got worse, it never got better. And every time it always got worse, it never got better. So as I say, I turned up here at 49 years of age, and I got a sponsor. And we started going through this work. Now, when he first started, so when he first took me through the work, we started in the preface, and he started showing me the historics of the book. And then he took me to, he showed me the contents, broke the contents down for me. And then as we go through the book now, after the foreword to the first, it says inquiries by scientific, medical, and religious societies will be welcome. He took me to the back of the book, and he took me to the spiritual experience, the medical view, the Lasker Award, and the religious view. Right. And he said, "This is very pertinent, what you're just about to read." They're only like little chapters at the back of the book. A lot of people miss them. They think the solution's in the first 164 pages. The solution's all over this book. There's only 30 pages in this book where the steps are contained. The rest is commentary around the book. But the power of identification around the book is where I seek the solution. Right. But the book's not going to keep me clean and sober because I've got to put the action in on the back of that. I don't worship the book. It's a basic text. So is the 12 and 12, what I work from. Sorry about this. It's a basic text what I work from, and I live from a bigger book, and that's called the Bible. I'm a redeemed sinner saved by grace through faith. But it says this at the back of this. It says, so you've got the spiritual experience, which is referenced on page 25, 27, and 47. But this is the medical view. Right, and it says this: since Dr. Silkworth's first endorsement of Alcoholics Anonymous, medical societies and physicians throughout the world have set their approval upon us. Following the excerpts and the comments of doctors present at the annual meeting of the Medical Society in the state of New York, where a paper on AA was read, Dr. Foster Kennedy, a neurologist, the organization of Alcoholics Anonymous calls on two of the greatest reservoirs of power known to man: religion and their instinct for association with one's fellows, the herd instinct. I think our profession must take appreciative cognizance to the great therapeutic weapon. If we do not do so, we shall stand convicted of emotional sterility and have it of lost faith that moves mountains, without which medicine could do little. Dr. G. Kirby Collier, a psychiatrist, he says, I have felt that AA is a group unto themselves, and their best results can be had under their own guidance as a result of the philosophy. Any therapeutic or philosophic procedure which can prove a recovery rate of 50-60% must merit. Now, this is a medical. Their point of view, their standpoint from what they could see was happening, what medicine couldn't do. And it says the merit of our consideration, Dr. Harry M. Thiebaud. Now, he worked the early predecessors around the ego, Harry Thiebaud. He says, as a psychiatrist, I have thought a great deal about the relationships of my speciality to AA. I've come to the conclusion that our particular function can often lie in preparing the way for the patient to accept any sort of treatment or outside help. Because the cunning, baffling feature, the insidiousness of this illness is not a drink, it's not a drug. It's denial. It's the ego. It's the pride, you know. And it says, I now conceive that the psychiatrist, the self-deception, the self-delusion, that this time it's going to be different. And it says, to be the task of breaking down the patient's inner resistance, so that which is inside him may, that inside him will flower as under the activity of the AA program, because it talks about being blocked off by calamity, pomp, and worship of other things. Now, inside me, it talks about in the book, it talks about, fundamentally God's in every man, woman, and child. And in the last analysis, he was there, you know. And then it says, I'll touch on one more of these doctors, because this is free talks Bill Wilson done to the medical fraternity. This guy's named W.W. Buer, broadcasting under your specialist. The American Medical Association of 1946, the NBC network, said in part, Alcoholics Anonymous are no crusaders, not a temperance society. They know that they must never drink or use drugs. They help others with similar problems. In the atmosphere, the alcoholic addict often overcomes the excessive concentration upon himself, learning to depend upon a higher power and absorb himself in his work with other alcoholic addicts. He remains sober day by day, the days up into weeks, the weeks into months and years. That's my experience. So when I got here and he first started taking me through the steps, you know, step one, I fully concede to my innermost self. What does that mean? I make an admission that I'm powerless and I'm hopeless. I suffer from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. The main problem centers in my mind, which is the malady. It ain't the spiritual malady, it's the malady, it's the obsession. It's a fault that's going to override all thoughts. It's an idea that's going to override all ideas. Then I suffer with an abnormal, my body's as abnormal as my mind. What, you know, as soon as I ingest a drink or a drug, it sets off this phenomenon of craving beyond my mental control. Then there's no control, whatever. And I'm on a spree. I don't know how long the spree is going to be, a day, a week, a month, a year, 18 months, 2 years. In my case, it was nearly well over 35 years, you know. And why can't I stay stopped? There's a battle going on within me. It's a white wolf, it's a black wolf, it's a flesh, it's a spirit, it's self-will, it's God's will. You know, I've got this rebellious duality going on within me, you know, and if I don't treat that, it's either going to want to be treated with a drink or a drug, or it's either going to be treated with a spiritual solution through the 12-step program. There's nothing else in the game. There's no easier, softer option. There's no middle of the road solution. There's no half measure. You know, I'm beyond human aid. I'm beyond human aid. My girlfriend can't help me. Family members can't help me. An employer can't help me. You know, consequences can't help me. Even when I thought that I'd abandoned the child, the guilt, the shame, and the remorse weren't sufficient enough to help me. So I fully conceded in the first half of the first step. And I made the 100% admission. I accept the second half of the first step, that I'm restless, that I'm irritable, and I'm discontent. No matter what I've got, no matter what I've got, I'm still restless, I'm irritable, and I'm discontent. And step two, when he put the proposition to me on step two, are you now willing to believe? I said, yeah, of course I am. Then he went, took me to page 53. He said, God is or God isn't. What's your choice to be? I said, God is. Then we make a decision. So step one shows me the problem. Step two shows me the solution. Step three shows me where I have to start putting some action in. So, but I can't just make a decision because there's three frogs sitting on some leaves. Three of them make a decision. One of them makes a decision. It's how many frogs left on there? It's still three. I've got to put some action in. So step three is, so when I first done step three, I've done it on my own in a prison cell. And I got down on my knees. I've been beaten into a state of reasonableness. 12 and 12 talks about the sins of omission and commission. A bigger book than a big book talks about godly sorrow drew me to repentance. So God humbled me. And I got down on my knees and I cried out to God, please help me. God, please help me. And I said to God, look, I'll do whatever you want me to do, God. Please keep me clean. Please keep me sober. And I'll do whatever you want me to do. And I said the prayer. Now, I met a guy when about 3 years ago. He was about 42 years in. He was 18 years in, this bloke. Hadn't worked steps. He was absolutely crackers. Got a guy 3 years in who was a little bit on fire, sort of thrashing through the steps. He had a spiritual experience. He had a spiritual awakening. And when I met him, he was 42 years sober. But I heard him do a share on step three. And he said he cut covenant with God in step three because it's a condition. I've got a new employer. He is the director. He's the principal. I'm his agent. And that means an employer in all areas of my life, not just in the 12-step program, all areas of my life. So I said the prayer, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me from the bondage of self, because it doesn't say relieve me from the drink or the drug. It says relieve me from the bondage of self, so I may better do what I will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them, so I bear witness to those I would help with thy power and thy love and thy way of life. May I do what I will always. So in one to three, I'm starting to give up. I'm starting to give up. The game's over. The gun's been hung up. The war's over. The white flag's up. I'm done. Because that's what he said to me, my first sponsor. Are you done? I said, I'm done. He said, for good and all. I said, for good and all. And then he took me to page 24. He showed me I lost the power of choice. He took me to page 44. He showed me I lose the power of control. Then he took me to page 52, but run me through them questions. And I said, yes, that's me. And then he said to me, are you willing to go to any lengths to sustain victory over that? I said, yes. He said, are you willing to make amends when the time's right? I said, yes. He said, you willing to freely pass on what I'm going to freely pass on to you when you're through the work, mate? I said, yeah, mate. Then he said this to me. He said, let me tell you something else. He said, I'm fallible, but this power you're going to get connected to, long as you put the footwork in, long as you put the action in, it's infallible. He said, I'm only human. I'm going to let you down at times, but this power will never ever let you down, long as you put the footwork in, long as you put the action in. And then he said to me, your reliance is not upon me, mate. He said, it's upon God. He said, I'm just going to stand in the gap. I'm going to put the toolkit at your feet. It's down to you to pick it up and make that pathway to get to God. Because that's what the steps are. So he said, are you ready for God? I said, yeah, of course I'm ready for God. So I start the 4 to 7 process, what it says in the reading, what I read in the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it says this, it says there is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, which is the step four, the leavening of the pride, which is the 5 to 7 process, the confession of shortcomings, and the process required for its successful consummation. There's no half measures here. There's no easier, softer option. It ain't just about the meetings I make. It's about the steps I take. And as I say, I needed to work this thing fast and furiously. I needed to get out of that old lively. And it says, but we saw that it really works in others. And we had come to believe in the hopelessness and the futility of life as we had been living it, the futility, the fatality, and the destructive nature of the fourth column in the inventory process. It shows me, that I'm full of pride, I'm full of ego, I'm full of self-pity, I'm full of morbid reflection, I'm full of selfishness, I'm full of insincerity, I'm full of dishonesty, self-seeking, and I'm thinking self-entitlement. I'm full of intolerance, I'm full of impatience, I'm full of lust, I'm full of infidelity, I'm full of irresponsibility. I'm thinking that the world owes me, and the world owed me nothing. And then it says, we had found, then it says, when therefore we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved. So, on Zoom, if I'm approaching, I'll put my name in the chat, or if I'm approaching people at face-to-face meetings, I'll do what my sponsor done to me. All right, mate, how you doing? Do you know what I mean? You've been about long, you got a sponsor. You know, if they haven't got a sponsor, I'll give them my number. You know, I'm available for sponsorship if I've got availability. And there you go. Then I'll stay in contact, like you've done with me. You know, and that's what this is all about. It says, and there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed. Now, the first nine steps are there to deflate the ego. That's what they're there to do. They're an ego deflator, an ego puncturer. Do you know what I mean? After the first half of the first step, my experience is it's all about change. It's all about humility. You know, it's all about change. It's all about humility, ideals, attitudes, and emotions. I mean, I was an ingrained oyster. I was an ingrained, you know, I was a criminal. Let's just say a petty criminal. I haven't stolen anything for well over 9 years now. I'm a productive member of society. I work, I pay taxes. You know, I don't do what I used to do. As a result of taking this action, having a psychic change, deep affected spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening. Now, Carl Jung, you know, the renowned psychiatrist Carl Jung, who's in the book, he said alcoholism, drug addiction, and whatever type of addiction it may be, is a lower manifestation of a spiritual thirst. And the only way it's going to be overcome is by having a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. So being rocketed into the fourth dimension, in 1 to 3, I start to give up. 4 to 7, I start to own up because I was constitutionally incapable of being honest. I didn't know how to be honest. I've made many resolutions, never a decision. I had many lurking notions and reservations. I've got a brother who's 23 years in. He was in and out for a while, but now he's 23 years in. His wife's 20 years in. I've got a sponsor who's 30 years in. And I've done thousands of them. I've got my phone used to just be full of fences and drug dealers. Now it's just full of people in recovery. You know, it's just full of people in recovery. I've got contacts. Thank God for Zoom. Zoom turned out to be a blessing. There's 113 people last time I looked at on this meeting tonight. You know, and Zoom turned out to be a blessing as well. And I'll get to that at the end of this share. And then it says, the great fact is just this and nothing less. We've had deep and effective spiritual experiences. Because it's only one thing for a chemical problem. Like, you know, you got Paul in the Bible. He had it on the road to Damascus. He had a deep, effective spiritual experience when he met the Lord, right? He was at, full of anger, wanting to kill people, you know. But I've had deep, effective spiritual experiences because I've had that merciless obsession around a drink and around a drug and the ingrained behaviors that I had when I before I come here, pre-recovery, taken out of me, taken out of me. You know, and then it says, we have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. Because once I start getting in the vertical, you know, by going through the steps, and the first nine steps are there to deflate the ego, as I said, 10, 11, and 12 is there to keep the ego deflated. To keep the ego deflated. So when I'd done a step five with my first sponsor, after I'd completed the four, he'd give me 2 weeks on it, and I had it done within 17 days. And I went round his house a week later, and then he prayed, and that's what I liked. He just put himself right out of the way, and I thought, yeah, sweet, he's not taking no credit for this. And we thrashed it out. He challenged me, he right-sized me, he identified with me, you know. And it says in the book, we turn back to the list for held the key to the future on page 66 of the book, which is the fourth column. Where am I at fault? Where am I at blame? What is my mistake in that? Which is my liabilities, my defects, the flaws in my makeup, the root causes, maladjustments, sin, if you like. So I needed to see that. And we thrashed out. It took about 11 hours. And at the end of the process, he's given me my liabilities, my defects, and then he gave me my assets as well. And he said, we've roughly ascertained an amends list. First five steps. First step's about honesty. Second step's about hope. Third step's about faith. Fourth step's about courage. Fifth step's about integrity. And then we went into six. And he said to me, go home, pocket your pride, read page 75, and spend an hour with God. And I'd kept a couple of things in my back pocket. And I phoned him up after the hour. I said, look, mate, I said, I've got a couple of things I didn't share with you that I need to really share with you. He said, all right. He said, now, I found out it's very common as well, you know. And he said, I'll meet you tomorrow at the coffee shop. And I met him at the coffee shop the next day, shared what I shared with him. You know, and then we went straight into six and seven. Now, I asked Bill Wilson where he put the miracle, talking about the absolutes, absolute honesty, selflessness, purity, and love. He said, I've put it in six and seven. Six and seven is it's all about willingness and humility, and everything it comes back to six and seven. And you know, step one comes into that. So I'm powerless. I can't remove my own defects of character. That's for sure. So when I went into six, I was entirely ready. Seven, humbly asked him to remove my shortcomings, and God took a lot from me. He really has. You know, it's been a process. It was a bit of a thawing out. A few people said, you're going to be raw for a while to me, you know, because you've used and you've boozed for well over 35 years. You know, that was my crutch for years, you know, and I was, but I just kept putting one foot after the other. I had five commitments when I first got here. You know, I knew that I needed to change. I knew this was the last house on the block. It's jails, it's institutions, dereliction or death. You know, and then step eight is about brotherly love. I've done a list, you know, now, later, maybe never. I had about 30 amends. 95% of my amends are done. Indirect, direct, financial. People I couldn't make amends to, so I have to do that in other ways as well. You know, and then step nine is about taking responsibility for my actions. I was very irresponsible. Do you know what I mean? And it's about forgiveness as well. You know, and I've had to do no send letters, family, my parents unfortunately died before I come into recovery. You know, and other family members that had passed as well. You know, I've had to make some direct amends to family members, ex-girlfriends. You know, I've had to go and clear up the wreckage of my past with my dishonesty, and I still got to do that in other ways as well. You know, and step 10 is about perseverance. Step 10, that was my time, but step 10 is about perseverance. So I continue to take personal inventory, and when I'm wrong, I promptly admit it. Right, and I set right any new mistakes as I go along. I've started clearing up the wreckage from my past. I can't hang about in step nine. It says if you're painstaking about this phase of your development, you're going to be a major before you're halfway through. That means halfway through the nine process. It is, and recovery is a process. Do you know what I mean? It's not a destination, it's a journey. And then I start to watch myself for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment and fear, self-manifested into various ways, dishonesty manifested into various ways. You know, resentment from that stem, it kills more alcoholics than anything. From that stem, all forms of spiritual disease and spiritual sickness. So that's like judgmentalism, criticism, envy, you know, all that bad gear that goes on within that duo. So I need to kind of get connected to this power and be a bit discerned for around the fourth and fifth column. You know, because when I'm living in that fourth column, I'm not a very nice person. You know, I'm the type of addict that'll take your watch off you and help you look for it, take your gear off you and help you look for it. You know, but I don't do that today as a result of this. You know, and so it's about perseverance and I have to watch. So the step 10 promises tell me, it says I watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment and fear. When these crop up, I ask God to remove them. First things first, as Dr. Bob said, seek ye the kingdom of God first, and all his righteousness will be added unto you. And then I phone someone, i.e. a sponsor or a fellow, you know, and I talk about what's going on. And then if I've armed someone, I make an amends promptly, and then I resolutely turn my thoughts to others. Love and tolerance of others is our code. You know, and then step 10 promises tell me I've been placed into a position of neutrality. It's happened on no fault or effort of my part. All I've done is work the first nine steps. You know, I've worked in environments where there's been loads of alcohol and drugs going on since I've been in recovery. You know, I'm a chef by trade. You know, I've worked in the hotel trade. You know, there's a bar there. It don't even enter my mind. I've been placed in, but what I have is a daily reprieve. I'm not cured, as I said in the beginning, you know. And then it says, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor or drugs has been given us without any thought or effort of our part. It says it just comes. That is the miracle of it. Absolute miracle. It says we are not even fighting it, or neither are we avoiding temptation. I won't go all the way through this, but it says it's easy to let up on our spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. Yesterday's victory. I never got on yesterday's supply. I don't stay clean and sober in the shower I had yesterday. So we're heading for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition every day. So 10 and 11 are conducive steps, perseverance and improvement and spiritual awareness. It's about continuity and improvement, perseverance and spiritual awareness. They enable me to work step 12, right? So on awakening, I ask God to direct my thinking, divorce himself, be dishonest or any self-seeking motives. You know, I ask him, please still show me what I can do for the individual alcoholic, drug addict or whatever type of addict, you know, for the man is still sick and the right next things to do. God, how best can I serve you? I will not one be done. And I get that and I enlarge on my step 11. And then as I go through my day, you know, it's not just a one-time event. I heard an Irish woman share, she was 45 years sober. And she said, if I give God the morning, he gives me the day. makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? If I give God the morning, he's going to give me the day. If I think that I'm running the show, my ego's reconstructing that mental twist, that mental blank spot, there might not be a cloud on the horizon. Next thing, bomb, I'm in the crack house thinking, how has this happened? And I've got loads of consequences as well, you know. But as a result of taking this action, as I say, I've been placed into a position of neutrality. Then I work to step 12, you know, and step 12 says we've had the first 11 steps of the alignment. The 12, so that's the alignment. It leads me to the power. And the 12th step is the assignment. It's about the vertical and the horizontal. And then I never arrive here. I just show to grow a day at a time, a moment at a time. I cultivate gratitude. You know, I do a review. I check to see where I'm resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid. Do I owe an apology if I kept saying to self, my ego might want to minimize or maximize something? Was I kind of loving towards all? Yeah, I try to be. Do you know what I mean? What could I have done better? There's always room for improvement. Always room for improvement. Always good, bad, or indifferent. There's going to be a blessing and a lesson, or a lesson in the blessing. Do you know what I mean? Was I thinking about me? Was I preoccupied with me all day? Was I thinking about what I could do for others? Was I thinking about what I could pack into the mainstream? But I don't slip into remorse, worry, or morbid reflection, because that would diminish my usefulness to others. Then I pray for forgiveness and the corrective measures to take. You know, and the book talks about pause when agitated or down. And I'll quote the books, my experience. I'm in the book. I'm in the book. I'm in the book. I'm the real drug addict alcoholic. I'm in the book. So I need to quote the book to let you know, if you're new, back from a relapse or you're drifting, that if you're of the type, you know, of the type, once you start, you can't stop. And when you stop, you can't stay stopped. You need a solution. And the only thing that's going to give you a solution is what he talks about on page 18 of this book. And it says this. I don't know what my time is. How long have I got left, Andy? Okay, so it says, okay, but the ex-problem drinker or user who has found this solution, who's properly armed with the facts about himself and generally been the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. The man that is making the approach has had the same difficulty, the power of identification. He obviously knows what he's talking about, and that the whole department shouts that is that to the new prospect that he's a man of a real answer. There's no attitude holier than now, nothing whatever except a sincere desire to be helpful. And there are no fees to pay, no axes to grind, no people to please, no lectures to be endured. These are the conditions we have found most effective. After such an approach, many take up their bed and walk again. So I just want to say, you know, if you're new, if you're back from a relapse or you're drifting, I've had a few drifters put in my path, you know, 20 years in, they've drifted off one meeting a week, not sponsoring people, you know, just chasing the bees in the honey, come at the end of themselves. You know, they've got fresh back through the work and they're back on beam and they're doing it. That's why I talk about the drifter as well as the newcomer. You know, when I was new and I first turned up here, and I just knew that I had to do what you lot had done. The book is like a cookery book, right? If I follow the recipe, meeting, sponsor, step work, service, I get in the middle of the triangle, the unity, the service, and the recovery. Get in the middle of that triangle, get in the middle of the herd, as it talks about in the medical view, the herd instinct. Get in the middle of the herd and just put the action in. You know, relapse is not a requirement here. You know, there is a solution. Believe me, it's an action-based program. It's spiritual action. There's no chapters of interthinking or interfering. It's into action. I'm going to leave it there. And Purdy, thank you for asking me to share tonight. And thanks to everyone who's done service on this meeting tonight. And it's an absolute honor and a pleasure to be able to freely give what was freely given to me. I'll leave it there. Thank you.